This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The United Way of Northwest Indiana is holding its very first Get Smart About Credit virtual event. It's coming up here on October 21st, and to tell us all about it, we have the United Way's Financial Wellness Coalition Coordinator, Erin Stojic. Erin, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Thanks so much for having us.
Well, I know this is a good opportunity to talk about a very serious topic, and maybe in a sort of entertaining way, I'm sure. You want to make it entertaining so that people will attend virtually and get something out of it and not feel like they're bored. They certainly can't get bored by learning how to better deal with credit, can they?
No, we can't. It's a really important topic, so we're excited to be able to educate.
Will you go through the idea of how this all ties in together locally with the national effort to improve everybody's credit knowledge?
The United Way of Northwest Indiana, our mission is to help families thrive. And so one of the ways that we do that is by helping them to develop financial wellness. So we've got a financial wellness coalition, and that group meets every month and just puts together ideas and events that can help individuals and families in our community to gain that financial wellness. So we came up with the plan to have an event around National Get Smart About Credit Day, which is the third Thursday of October. Mm-hmm. And we picked that because we know that credit and credit scores are such an important topic for our community members. We know the impact that credit has on so many things like buying a home or purchasing a car, even down to your getting your utilities turned on or your car insurance rates. So we know how important credit is. We know how important having a good credit score can be for financial health. So we had a bunch of really awesome volunteers that stepped forward to put together these 15-minute classes on National Get Smart About Credit Day, which is the 21st of October. And like you said, we don't want people to get bored. So we really focus on the main takeaways, not getting bogged down with information overload. And that 15-minute session is something that we hope is really accessible to individuals. It's not a huge time commitment. And we'll try to make it as fun and relatable as possible.
Is this the reason why you wanted to set up 15-minute long sessions, so this way you could get as much information out and yet not bore anybody? Certainly they've got to learn something by even 15 minutes by looking at this information.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough right now, Chris. With everything being virtual, we know that asking someone to come on to an hour-long event and learn about credit is not really feasible. A lot of people don't have that much time in their schedules. They don't have the bandwidth to pay attention to that. And so we're really focused on 15 minutes. That way, too, they can pick and choose. So we have five different topics. If it's not important to them, then they can just pick the ones that are important to them. And another thing I want to make sure that people know is mm-hmm. whether they can actually attend the live session or not is not important. I will have a registration list, and I'll send out a video. We'll make recordings of the event, and anybody that wants to see the recording just needs to register and don't have to be present on the live stream to be able to access that information.
Well, that's very good, because you're talking about a number of topics. You're talking about creating a budget and building credit, monitoring credit, repairing credit if it's gotten damaged somehow or another. These are all very important topics that people want to go back and refer to. So if they can't make it for the live events that get underway on the 21st, the whole series, of course, five different sessions on the hour, every hour, between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. is the schedule. They can have a chance to still catch up with everything. We'll go through the list, too, about the sponsors that the United Way has set up here to be able to make all this possible.
Yes, absolutely. As I mentioned, we have a bunch of wonderful volunteers that are part of our coalition. And this event in particular, we have participants that have volunteered from First Merchants Bank, from Chase Bank, from First Financial Bank, People's Bank, and Centier Bank. So they'll all be represented. These are our experts around credit. So I just put together the event. I am not the credit mm-hmm. expert. That's why I'm inviting these brilliant folks to come on and talk with you and share their best tips and tools and information.
Well, certainly worth checking out. The very first Get Smart About Credit virtual event is coming up on Thursday, October 21st. It's going to basically be five different sessions on the hour, every hour, beginning tomorrow at 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. And if you want to find out more about the sessions or register about them, how do you do so?
Sure. You'll want to hit up our website, and that's www.unitedwaynwi.org. /credit-day. And there are five, as Chris mentioned, five different sessions. You can register for each of those or just the ones that are important to you. Anybody who registers will receive a recording of the event later. So if you do catch it, that's great. If you can't catch it, you'll get a recording to watch later.
Well, that's great to hear. Erin Sojic is the Financial Wellness Coalition Coordinator with the United Way of Northwest Indiana. Once again, this very first virtual Get Smart About Credit event is coming up on Thursday the 21st with the sessions beginning at 9 a.m. And we hope you have a chance to see them and see them all if you register to be able to receive them later. Erin, thank you very much for the information, and hope this turns out well and we have more of these coming up in the future, only maybe in person rather than virtual, huh?
Yeah, that is our hope, for sure.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Seems that Project Neighbors in Valparaiso always has housing projects of some type underway, and we're going to find out what the latest projects happen to be. Paul Schreiner is Executive Director of Project Neighbors, and he is joining us from Valparaiso to talk about it. Paul, thank you for being with us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Glad to do it, Chris.
Well, some interesting things happening these days. I know among them have been helping residents in various states that they may happen to be in, whether it happens to be low-income residents or maybe women that need to help because of problems at home and have family members to take care of. Or I guess in one particular case, we have residents in the Valparaiso area who are recovering from addictions. And I know that is the main goal that the next of the two respite houses is all about. Will you fill us in first about Respite House 2?
Respite House 2 was a project that came up at about 5 o'clock one morning when I went to the gym to do my minimal workout, and I bumped into Mitch Peters. Mitch was the founder and director of the Respite House program at the time, and he and I just began talking, and he mentioned that he was limited to 16 beds in his existing facility, and boy, did he need more, because he had a waiting list of 80 to 100 people at all times. Ironically, Project Neighbors, a different organization, had just purchased two adjacent lots on Union Street in Valparaiso, and we just began to talk, and one thing led to another. And my board of directors agreed to sell those two lots to Respite House at the cost that we had paid for them, and to manage the construction of the new Respite House. Mm-hmm. Flash by a year and a half later, and we're breaking ground, and now flash by another year, and it's all done, and the 22-bed facility is fully occupied. So now Respite House has 22 beds in one spot and 16 in another.
I know that residents in Valparaiso are very familiar with the projects that Project Neighbors does, but folks outside of the community may not know. And when last time we talked, we were talking about helping women that need assistance someplace safe to live. Will you give us an idea for our listeners that aren't familiar with what Project Neighbors does, the way that the projects get started, the needs that you mentioned that have to be covered?
Well, everything is a bit organic. We don't have a narrowly defined mission. One of the things that the founder of the organization did, Walt Reiner, was he would buy old places, fix them up, and find families that otherwise couldn't afford to live here and made it possible for them to live here. Many of those initial investments were for African-American families that desired to get out of the high-rise ghettos, if you will, of Chicago. I think 7 or 8 families found a path to a better life that way. That was 50 years ago. We do continue to construct housing because we see the need as being so desperate, not just for African Americans, but for lots and lots of people who can't handle the high cost of housing in Valparaiso. And that's not unique to Valparaiso. That's a common problem all over the country. So right now we are endeavoring. Well, let me back up.
Okay.
We started a project aimed at healthcare. We built a building to house what became HealthLink. HealthLink is a federally funded healthcare facility that offers healthcare to people without insurance, with insurance, with money, without money. We built them a building. It was 11,000 square feet. They outgrew it in 13 years, And because of the benevolent attitude of their director, we purchased that building back at a very, very favorable price, gutted it, and built 18 very small efficiency apartments for single women. Not single women of any particular plight, but anybody that needed very safe, modern housing, but minimal in size, about 300 square feet each unit. Each unit has a bathroom, full bathroom, and a micro kitchen, a small kitchen. When we did that, Housing Opportunities decided they wanted to do the same thing, and they purchased the building, and we collaborated on the construction of the remodeling of that building. So now we have 33 units in Valparaiso serving the needs of these single low-income women.
Mm-hmm.
We're attempting to do the same thing for men as we speak.
I noticed you mentioned that, in my notes that you are talking with city officials to try to get this 16-unit efficiency apartment building for low-income men underway. And you mentioned Housing Opportunities. It's another project that you're working in conjunction with them, I understand.
Yeah, we'll collaborate with Housing Opportunities. We'll co-own it and co-manage it. The issue is where it's going to be, and that's the somewhat contentious issue with the city of Valparaiso.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the city's been working for years, it seems, in fact, under former Mayor John Casas, to try to find ways to create more affordable housing for residents in Valparaiso. So it looks like that at least there are other projects that are underway as well that will work toward that goal, I would think.
I think the city has an ear for this, but the marketplace is headed in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the last couple of years, property values have increased dramatically, such that an old beat-up house that I could buy for $80,000 now costs $150,000, and nobody is building new affordable housing. Nobody in the marketplace is doing that.
Are you finding that besides the economy and the demand, of course, is just so high in Valparaiso, that's the reason that the demand is outstripping the availability of houses?
Clearly. The realtors that I talk to say that a house under $200,000 goes on the market in one day, and it's sold by that evening.
Wow.
In many cases, with offers exceeding the listed price. With that atmosphere, profit-seeking developers and builders, you know, if they're true to capitalism, have no recourse except to aim for the upper dollar marketplace.
We're talking with Paul Schreiner, who's executive director of Project Neighbors in Valparaiso. And Paul, I understand that among other projects that you have been working on or are working on is a new duplex. Will you tell us how you got into the duplex building basis these days rather than just apartments?
Well, our initial mission was to house families with children. And I used to have a formula for purchasing ground. If I could buy a vacant land for $15,000 per unit, I could build something very, very affordable. Well, quickly, there's nothing around for $15,000 that's buildable. So I doubled it and said if I could buy it for $30,000 and put a duplex on it, I could meet my goal. Well, the market has even outstripped that. So even though we're having to pay more money for buildable land, we cut the cost per unit down in half by putting a duplex on it. So that's why we went to duplexes rather than single-family houses.
I see. Mm-hmm. I understand that the Project Neighbors has a great opportunity that's always there for people that want to volunteer to help, and that's how I understand how a lot of these building projects get underway, don't they?
We use the Habitat model with one exception. We don't mandate that the person that's going to live there participate in it.
Mm-hmm.
And one can argue that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not going to talk about that. But volunteers are absolutely crucial to the success of our effort, and I find volunteers eager to participate. And we simply use an informal system of letting folks know what's going on, when it's going on, and they show up over and over and over.
Paul, thank you for spending time talking about the projects that Project Neighbors in Valparaiso have been involved in, including finishing up a second respite house that will help residents who are recovering from addiction, and, of course, the continuing projects that are also underway, and the plans to hopefully build more efficiency apartments in Valparaiso to help people out. Thank you for being with us today to talk about it.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome. Paul Schreiner is the Executive Director of Project Neighbors in Valparaiso. Northwest Indiana Congressman Frank Mervan spoke out recently to federal environmental officials about U.S. Steel's discharges of iron and an oily sheen into the Burns Waterway at the mouth of Lake Michigan, saying that, in his words, more must be done to prevent discharges. Mervan sent out a letter to the Environmental Protection Agency saying, quote, simply mitigating environmental violations after the incident is not sustainable and cannot continue to be the norm, end quote. U.S. Steel's Midwest plant in Portage discharged an oily substance into Lake Michigan on October 7th, and wastewater was at elevated levels of iron on September 26th. Beaches at the Indiana Dunes National Park had to close as a result of both of the discharges, and in his letter to the EPA, Mervan had called for federal regulators to pay serious attention to this matter. The steelmaker said the October 7th oily sheen did not harm human health, aquatic life, or wildlife. But the Indiana Department of Environmental Management found that the earlier discharge back in September had violated the company's wastewater plant permission to allow the amount of iron that could be released into the source of drinking water. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. As cooler weather approaches, it's time to review the ways to save energy and money as we go into the winter months. And a member of NIPSCO's energy efficiency team, Ryan Tedeschi, was with us with some tips.
When it comes to temperatures dropping, just a couple, quick tips. Have your heating system checked and serviced on a regular basis. It's always good to keep a clean air filter installed. Sometimes if you look at your air filter and it's really dirty, that could block the flow of air. So really important to do that on a regular basis. It's always a good idea to add weather stripping or sealant around any doors or windows where air may be escaping. I know at my own home, I had to do a seal on a door where in the wintertime I noticed that a draft was coming in. So to prevent that heat that I'm heating my home with from escaping on a regular basis, I had to add some weather stripping there. So a good idea to check those things. It's also a good idea to use window drapes to your advantage. If it's a cold day, let some sun in, and you could block the sun out on some of those hotter days.
Right.
It's a good idea to keep return heating air ducts clean. Dust and lint can keep a room from getting enough heat and make the heater work harder than it has to. And it's also a good idea to adjust and point your air vents across your floor rather than straight up, because warm air does rise. So this way the whole room could get better heating.
What are some of the program offerings that customers often use when they turn to NIPSCO for help?
Sure. So just high level, some of the program offerings that we have that customers use often is our online marketplace. So this is new this year, but the NIPSCO marketplace makes it really simple for you to get instant discounts on energy-saving products shipped right to your home. So just to give you an example of some of the things that you could find on our marketplace, up to 75% off LED lighting, smart thermostats, air purifiers, power strips, and shower heads.
Mm-hmm.
We also have an appliance recycling program. So at no cost to you, our contractor can pick up your working appliance, such as a fridge or freezer, and you get $50 for those items. And we also have a full lineup of rebates. So just some examples of some of the rebates we offer, $65. For smart thermostats, $200 for natural gas furnaces, $50 on the air purifiers, and $60 on the AC tune-up. And a qualified equipment list and full details are found at NIPSCO.com under energy efficiency. A few more programs we have is our home energy assessment. We have this option in-home or virtual. So this is where a professional energy advisor can take you step-by-step through the assessment to identify long-term savings opportunities. And we also have a program that's called Income Qualified Weatherization. And if you're income eligible, you could schedule a no-cost appointment to improve the performance of your home while lowering your energy bill. So this program is very similar to our home energy assessment. The technician will do it on-the-spot installation of certain energy products such as LED bulbs, a duct sealing, possibly a programmable thermostat, and then they'll also go over other possible incentives.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris, one of the easiest programs I think that we have for customers to use is our home life calculator. Customers could go to our website, easily access this tool, where they answer some basic questions related to their home, and then if eligible, you get a free energy kit shipped right to your house. This kit may include LED bulbs, sink aerators, a furnace whistle, and some more energy savings items. So, again, if you go to NIPSCO.com, at the very top, there's a topic, energy efficiency. Click on that topic, and we'll give a full list of all of our programs and the eligibility details.
Okay. Let me ask you, Ryan, a question that I know comes up, and we talk about it here at the radio station from time to time, and I'm sure maybe people at home do as well, too. If you have enough gadgets and you have enough chargers to keep those gadgets running, should we unplug our gadgets and the chargers when they're not in use?
Well, what I do, so I plug my electronics into a power strip. That way you could turn them all off really easily. So things like, you know, screensavers on your computer, they may save screens, but not energy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have everything plugged into a power strip, you could flip the switch and turn everything off when you're not using it.
I guess that kind of goes along with the idea of some general energy savings tips. Have you got some other than the ones that we've mentioned specifically going into the fall and into the winter months?
Yeah, a couple basic tips that I think homeowners could use on a regular basis. When you're washing dishes, try to use a dishwasher that's full when possible. Dishwashers use about 15 gallons of hot water, where you could use up to 20 gallons if washing by hand. Then opt for the shorter cycle if that's a possible option. When cooking, you know, on those nice days outside, use the grill if possible. If the weather's nice, cooking on an outdoor grill typically uses less energy and the kitchen stays cooler. And then, you know, one of my favorites is smart thermostats. This is great from controlling your home's temps while you're away, and it personally helps me better monitor my heating and cooling usage. And then LED lighting, you know, you could save energy. The bulbs typically last longer. And then, you know, some basic items around laundry. Avoid overloading washers and dryers. This could cut down on the energy efficiency. And then clean the lint filter after each use to make sure the machine's running efficiently as well.
That's Ryan Tedeschi with NIPSCO's Energy Efficiency Team. Lake County election officials yesterday approved some proposals that would redraw 9 precincts to accommodate the new House and Senate redistricting maps, but they say not all of the precincts in the redrawn ones have voters in them. Election and Voter Registration Board Director Michelle Fayman says they're just splitting precincts to meet their legislative lines, referring to the lawmakers. And here is the list of the changes. In Griffith, a new precinct is proposed near St. John Township and Ross Township that consists of a county park. And Fayman says she didn't know why that precinct was even drawn. A portion of the Cedar Lake precinct number 1 would move into a new precinct number 10 in Cedar Lake, which would affect 430 voters based on the House map. In Eagle Creek Township, Precinct 1 would be split up to form a new Eagle Creek Township Precinct 2 based on the House line. That would affect 116 voters. Hanover Township, Precinct 1 and Precinct 2 were proposed as a redraw from being side by side to 1 in the bottom and 2 in the middle and based on the House map. According to the Senate map, a new Hanover Township Precinct number 3 is being proposed on top of Hanover Township Precinct 2. A portion of the Ross Township Precinct 20 would move to Crown Point Precinct 21 based on the new House and Senate maps, but it will not affect voters because Ross Township Precinct 20 is a small triangular area that doesn't have any voters in it at all. A portion of the Center Township Precinct 5 would move into St. John Precinct 13A based on the Senate maps, and that will affect 7 voters. And a portion of the St. John Township Precinct 13 will move into a new St. John Precinct 19, but no voters affected there yet because that area has currently covering just some new development. And the county's proposal of the precincts will have to be reviewed by the state and by the Office of Census Data. They could either approve, deny, or make recommendations. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.